Good morning. I'm glad to see that there are a good number of people here to learn about what's new with the GNU Compiler Collection. Definitely the most important and coolest free software project out there. I'm Janice Johnson. I've been working on the GNU Compiler Collection for about 9 years now, and I do that as part of my job. My company didn't send me, so I won't mention who they are, but it's really cool to be able to work on a project like this. What I'll be talking about today is a little bit about what GCC is, because there are an awful lot of people who don't realize what the scope of the project is. What's new, meaning new things that have been added to GCC in the last 3 years or so, and what's coming up in the next release. Okay. And let me warn you that I went to the speaker's presentation on Sunday, and Graham said, get rid of all those bullet points. So I got rid of all those bullet points. If you really want to see what was in the bullet points, ask me for a copy of the presentation afterwards, because I just moved all that stuff down to the notes section, so the details are all there. What is the GNU Compiler Collection? It's not just a compiler for C. It doesn't just run on Intel processors. It's not just available on Linux. It's much, much bigger than that. The GNU Compiler Collection, as supported by the Free Software Foundation, currently has support for 7 programming languages. My impression is that most of the work within the community, directly within the community, and use of GCC is for C, C++, and Fortran. There's an awful lot of work that goes into the Ada compiler. My impression is that people who are serious users of Ada get that directly from Ada Core. They have their own tree of Ada, but they're very, very good at getting their changes back into the FSF version so that other people can get it directly from there if they want to. Java support has kind of fallen off since Sun opened up their Java implementation. And then Objective-C and Objective-C++ are there for mainly for use on Mac OS X. And since Apple has been moving away from GCC and towards using LLVM, there's not as much happening there. GCC supports a lot of computer architectures. And it's a really wide range, too, from embedded processors like the AVR, to the Z architecture that's used in IBM mainframes. GCC will even support code for MMIX, which is the architecture that was defined by Donald Knuth for teaching purposes. GCC supports a lot of operating systems. On the free and open source operating systems, it's the system compiler. It's also available for 2 different environments that run on Windows, and then a lot of embedded operating systems. And on proprietary operating systems, GCC is available as an alternative to the system compiler. This makes it a lot easier for people, ISVs, who are porting code to run on lots of different systems to use the same compiler everywhere. Support for an operating system consists of things like knowing about the object file format that's used on that and the application binary interface, which even for a single processor might change from one operating system to another. A single compiler in the GNU Compiler Collection looks something like this. The input is source code in a high-level language. The output is assembly code for a particular target, where a target is a combination of a processor and an operating system. The compiler is a single executable, but it has 3 distinct parts. Keep pushing the wrong button. This is what the GNU Compiler Collection looks like as a whole bunch of compilers, for each one of which supports an a programming language, and a target. Oh, and by the way, if you have questions while I'm going along, feel free to ask them, but I will ask for the microphone to catch up with you. Okay, within a compiler, there's a front end that's language specific, a back end that is specific to a target, and then a middle end. And that phrase still bends my brain after years of working on compilers. The front end recognizes the source language, it parses it to put it into a tree format that can be used by the rest of the compiler. The back end is, as I said, specific to a particular target, and it takes a low-level version of the program and converts it to assembly language. And it needs to know about what kind of, not just the architecture, but also the processor, so what kind of registers are available for that processor, and what's the best tuning to use, because within an architecture family, there might be some instructions that are a better choice on one implementation of the architecture and other instructions that are a better choice on a different implementation. And in the middle is the middle end. The middle end gradually lowers the representation of the program from the trees that it gets from the front end that look pretty much like the program that you put in at the start, and lowers them. There are multiple different internal representations in there until it gets down to RTL, or the register transfer language, that can be operated on by the back end to do the actual instruction selection and things like that. In the middle end, there are a huge number of optimization passes that can be run. GCC has options -01, -02, and -03, and each of those enables a big set of optimizations to take place. There are also a lot of optimizations that aren't included in any of those, and you can ask for them. So at each step along the way of the code being in a different internal representation, there are multiple analysis passes and optimization passes that can gradually transform the code and add more information about it that can be used by the further optimization passes. And the goal of those, of course, is to make the code that comes out of the end run as fast as possible. I already hit this next one by mistake, a collection, a small subset of the collection. So for any particular target, you would see up to 7 compilers for the 7 different languages. What's new? And by new, I'm going to be talking about the releases that have happened in the last 3 years. In 2007, GCC 4.2 was released, and then in a year or so later, Okay, 4.3, and then last year, 4.4. And in any release of GCC, you can expect to see a certain set of kinds of optimizations, new improvements to the compiler. There's always going to be new language support because the language standards committees are always really busy figuring out how to make each of the languages ever more complicated. And so GCC tries to keep up with new language standards. There are also extension definitions that come out of the language standards, and so GCC gets some of those if there are developers who are interested in those. There are usually 1 or 2 infrastructure improvements in any release of GCC, things where the old infrastructure is just getting too difficult to deal with, so somebody bites the bullet and goes in and replaces it with something that's easier to deal with. In every single release, there are going to be improvements to existing optimizations and new optimization passes, because there are lots of people who think that writing optimization passes is just the coolest thing in the world. And any new release usually has support for at least 1 new processor and perhaps an entire new architecture. And as time marches on, there are older targets that people stop using, people stop maintaining them. So once in a while, there are older targets or older operating systems that are dropped from the compiler, usually with lots of notice so that there won't be too much screaming at the end from people who are using that. But if nobody's using something, it doesn't make sense to keep changing it when the rest of the compiler changes. Every release usually sees some improvements to warning messages. I hear a lot from people who say, oh, I love the warnings that I get from GCC. They've saved my life multiple times. And then, of course, in every release, there are changes that improve the robustness and performance of GCC itself. Okay. One of the big things for a lot of people that went into GCC 4.2 was the switch from version 2 or later of the GNU General Public License to GPLv3. Now, a lot of projects had big, heavy discussions about whether to move to GPLv3. There were arguments. There was gnashing of teeth. In GCC, there was none of that. It was clear from the beginning that we were going to be moving because the copyrights for GCC are held by the Free Software Foundation. So shortly after GPLv3 became finalized, we got the word to go through and change all the header files that had license information. Now, for 4.2, that happened to all of the everything in the compiler except for the runtime. But those changes, as I said, went into GCC 4.2, and there was a decision made not to have further bug fix releases for the active release branches at that time. Otherwise, it was going to be too confusing if there were patches submitted against 4.2 to figure out whether that contribution was licensed for 4.1 or for GPLv2 as well. Another big license change involving GPLv3 went in over a year later, and that was to the runtime libraries. It took a long time for the Free Software Foundation and their lawyers at the Software Freedom Law Center to come up with a runtime exception for GPLv3 that could be used in the libraries that made sense. You know, it was simple, but it did what needed to be done. The runtime for GCC needs an exception. It can't be GPLv3 because it gets linked in with user programs. And it's a goal of GCC to be able to use it on any program, including proprietary programs. And of course, nobody's going to touch it if linking with the libraries is going to make your program GPL. So there have always been runtime license exceptions to say that this code is covered by the GPL, but it's okay, it doesn't affect your program at all if you're just linking it in as a normal course of compiling and linking your program. For years and years, the GCC Development Committee or community has been begging the Free Software Foundation and Richard M. Stallman in particular for permission to support link time optimizations and plugins. Now, both of those mean that the GCC compiler is no longer a single executable with things, magic things just happening inside of it. Both of those mean that in the case of link time optimizations, that you're writing out a bunch of information about the program. You're writing it out to disk. Somebody could figure out the format that you're using, and that could allow proprietary programs to go in and add optimizations that were not available to all GCC users. And of course, that's a bad thing. And as for plugins, actually, I really do think it's a bad thing. I shouldn't be flip about that. And for plugins, you have something that's actually running as part of GCC itself and has access to all the information that the compiler has and can go in and, you know, pull it out or put new stuff in. and there was fear that people would write proprietary plugins. And once again, take advantage of all the work that had gone into GCC, which is an important piece of free software. So the solution was to come up with a runtime exception to the GPL that says that you are not allowed to use the runtime if any module in it was created by a combination of a GPL v3 program like GCC and code that was not GPL v3 compatible. Now, that doesn't apply to assemblers and linkers. You can still use proprietary assemblers and linkers with it. But adding the new runtime exception to GCC paved the way for the community to be able to finally support link time optimizations and plugins. So that was a really exciting development. I mentioned that every release has support for programming languages based on what the standards committee had been doing. I used to be able to look at my slides, and I followed Graham's advice and took all the words off. Okay. So for C, GCC, a long time ago, added an extension to support non-static inline functions. And it was defined in a particular way, and people were using that. And then the C Standards Committee came along and defined in the C99 standard non-static inline functions, and the definition clashed. So there were discussions for a long time about what to do about this. And in GCC 4.2, they finally figured it out. And so now if you want one of them, there are certain options you can use. If you want the other semantic definition of it, there are other options you can use. In 4.3, there were two big extensions that were added. One of those I was involved with, and that's support for decimal floating point arithmetic as defined in a technical report from the C Standards Committee. And that's currently implemented for x86-64, PowerPC, and the Z architecture. And it doesn't take a lot of changes in the back end of a compiler to make that work with other compilers as well, other targets as well. Before there was a C standard, there was Kernighan and Ritchie C, and that defined support for variable argument lists with vararg.h, which clashed with standardarg.h that was in the standard. GCC has been supporting both of those for a long time, and it was really, really messy. So in GCC 4.4, all of the remaining support for vararg.h was finally removed, and if you have old code that uses vararg.h, you have to fix it. Okay. A lot's been going on in GCC, in GCC and in the GNU C++ support. There were changes that went into 4.3 and 4.4 that affect source compatibility, which means that it's possible that if you have C++ code that worked in 4.2 and earlier, you might have to change it for newer releases. And that is because a lot of the C++ header files had all these extra includes in them that would pull in other standard include files. And that got messy. So that was cleaned up in 4.3 and 4.4. That means that if you pulled in one header file and needed support from another one that was pulled in kind of magically behind your back, now you have to go and change your code to explicitly pull in all of the header files that you need. The C++ Standards Committee defined a lot of new functionality for the C++ standard library in TR1, or Technical Report 1, and that support has been going into GCC in 4.2 and 4.3, maybe 4.4 as well. I didn't have that in my notes. And the C++ Standards Committee has been really busy. They've been working on a new version of the C++ standard, currently called C++0X, And there's been a lot of work going to get those changes into GCC, and so a lot of that will be in GCC 4.4. Since those definitions are not yet in the standard, that support is all considered experimental. And that means that if the standards committee changes any of the definitions, then GCC is going to change so it will be following the standard. We don't want to get into a situation again where GCC supports something that's just a little bit different from what the standard says. There's been a lot of work going into Fortran. And is there anybody here who uses Fortran? Cool, cool. The really cool thing about the Fortran support in GCC is that, unlike most of the rest of the compiler, it's all done by volunteers, and they tend to be people who use GNU Fortran for their day jobs, doing weather forecasting or designing jet engines, and they want a good free compiler to use. And so when the current GNU Fortran compiler went in 4.0, it supported Fortran 90, then they added support for Fortran 95. Now they have Fortran 2003 standard supported, and they're doing work on the Fortran 2008 standard. So, pretty cool. OpenMP is an open standard for parallel programming. It works by putting directives into a program, and then there's a runtime associated with it. Support for this went into, either 4.2 or 4.3 for one version of the standard, of the OpenMP standard, and then 4.4 for a later version of the standard. And in GCC's case, this support is available in C, C++, and Fortran. For all of those, the directives are supported in the front end, and then the rest of the compiler knows about the OpenMP commands. And then there's a runtime, libgomp, where gomp is for GNU OpenMP. There have been a lot of infrastructure changes going in lately. GCC has had support for data flow analysis that did not match the academic definitions of data flow analysis at all. The support that GCC had was developed by hackers who did not have formal compiler classes, and so they just did something that kind of worked, and that was really confusing and annoying to people who came into the GCC project from academia and knew what data flow analysis was supposed to look like. So some of those guys got fed up enough that in GCC 4.3 they ripped out all of the old data flow analysis, which was actually in, there were multiple places in the compiler that had their own kind of versions of it, and they ripped it all out, put in a new version, and they're watching carefully to make sure that nobody tries to sneak in another version or go around it. And data flow analysis is really important for a lot of optimizations, and it's really critical that all of the optimizations that might make changes to the current state of the program update all of the information so that the other following optimization passes don't mess up your code. A big change, infrastructure change that went into GCC 4.4 is the graphite infrastructure. And this uses polyhedral models to look at the structures of loops and enables new optimizations based on those, optimizations on loops. So there are three optimizations based on graphite that went into GCC 4.4, and there are plans for a lot more of those. Now for the optimizations themselves, there are improved optimization passes. There's a lot of these, and I'm going to read them, and maybe you know about compilers and will understand them. But anyway, I'm going to read them just so you know that there's a lot. People have been busy. The improved analysis and optimization passes in the last three versions are alias analysis, dead code elimination, dead store elimination, dominator tree optimizations, inlining, partial redundancy elimination, points to analysis, scalar replacement of aggregates, value range propagation, and vectorization. And vectorization is cool because it got to the point where it was actually helping everywhere and not hurting, and it was stable. And so that was added to -03 in GCC 4.3. There are a lot of new optimization passes. In 4.2 and 4.3, we have sign extension elimination. This is a fun one. Strongly connected components-based value numbering. Predictive commoning, parallelized loops. That's a cool one. Vector cost model, whole program matrix reorganization, and whole program structure reorganization. And for those last two, they're whole program because they're actually changing, they're looking at access patterns for structures and arrays and moving things around. And if you just do that on part of your program, then your data structures aren't going to match and things are going to get really ugly. Okay. And I put the same thing in my notes twice, so I don't have the list for 4.4, but it's another really interesting list, including the more looped optimizations, including the ones for graphite. Now, when we look at optimizations and whether they are accepted into GCC at all, and particularly whether they're added to 01, 02, or 03, there are a lot of considerations that go into those. There are a lot of trade-offs between the runtime performance that you get from the optimization, I mean, that's why the optimization is there, and the costs for doing that optimization. Any optimization pass is making the compiler do more work. Sometimes it just does a little bit of work, but sometimes it does a lot of work and maybe uses up a lot of resources along the way. So if it's taking a long time and using a lot of resources, then you want to make it optional if it goes in. Some optimizations blow up the code size, other ones don't. That's a consideration about whether it goes in or not, whether it goes in all the time or is left out if you're optimizing for size. And then there are some optimizations that only improve certain classes of code or only improve code on certain processors. In fact, there are some optimizations that actually make things worse on some processors or some kinds of code. So those have to remain optional. And then there are some optimizations that can expose latent bugs in user programs. And surprisingly enough, those can go in no matter how much users scream and gnash their teeth. And I have a couple of examples of those. One is alias analysis. Now, the standards for C and C++ say that if you do type punning, that is, accessing a value as if it had a different type, then the result is undefined behavior. And if something would result in undefined behavior, then the compiler can do whatever it wants. It can assume that that is not happening. So in this case, we have two int variables and a pointer to a float variable. So this assignment here cannot possibly change the value of I, right? Because if it did, that would be violating the rules, and so the compiler can assume it can't happen. That means that we can move that instruction before or after the other instructions, or we can look at the assignment to J and we can say, well, we know that I is 4 because nothing else could have changed it, and just stuff the 4 into J. Maybe we see that I isn't used anywhere else and just throw it out. There probably aren't many examples out there of people doing this with float and int, but there are a lot of examples of people doing it with other data types. And when alias analysis and the compiler got better, a lot of people's programs stopped working. But it buys a lot of performance improvements. Yes. Oh, can you take the microphone? Where'd he go? Okay, just yell it out.
Does that apply to things like if an event and the utility is going to unsigned it, would that be enough of a type difference to delay?
I think so. I don't remember the details of the rules, but look it up if you're going to try something like that. Okay. But there was enough code that was broken by this that they added, GCC added an option to turn off alias analysis, and there's an also an option to warn about cases where the program looks like it's violating that, so that you can go in and change your code. And then if you can't change it, you just say no strict aliasing. Another area where the compiler can assume that things aren't going to happen is with signed integer overflow. The C and C++ standards both say that the result of signed integer arithmetic that overflows is undefined. So the compiler can assume that it will not happen. There was a new analysis pass that went in called value range propagation. And so here it could see that that variable I starts out as a 1, so it's starting out as a value that's greater than 0. Every time we go through the loop, we're going to multiply it by 2, and that makes it bigger. And we can assume that that operation is not going to overflow. And so the final test that I is greater than 0 has to be true. And so the compiler can turn this into an infinite loop. If the final test were reversed, you know, if it were checking for it to be less than 0, it could just throw out the whole thing because that couldn't possibly happen. Once again, there were people who had code that was relying on some particular thing happening, and probably what was happening was different on every processor they ran on. So GCC has an option to turn off optimizations that assume that you're writing in C and not some imaginary language that actually does something when you do signed integer overflow. And there's also a whole set of levels of warnings to tell you that your code looks like it's relying on signed integer overflow doing something instead of anything. So what's next? By what's next, I mean what's in GCC 4.5. GCC 4.5 will be released sometime. I think the original plan was for last year, but it will be released sometime. It's what is currently GCC mainline. It's stabilizing. So it's pretty obvious what's actually going to be there. Some of the cool things that are there are, well, of course, lots of new optimizations. And I have my cheat sheet isn't up there anymore. It's over here. Okay, right. Of course, more optimizations using the Graphite framework, named address spaces, and then, accurate debug information for optimized code. Is there anybody here who's ever tried to use a debugger on optimized code and you say print X and it gives you something that looks like total garbage? Okay, lots of people. When you use GCC 4.5 and optimize your code, if you're debugging away and you say print X, then the debugger will either tell you a value of X that makes sense in some way of looking at the program, since it's optimized code, or it will say, gee, I'm sorry, I have no idea what that is right now, which is what you want instead of something that's just kind of pulled out of the air. The big things, though, in GCC 4.5 are link time optimization and plugins. And as soon as the new license stuff came through, people got to work on that stuff. So link time optimization pulls the compiler apart. In effect, there's a new front end for the compiler for link time optimization, or LTO. So when you're compiling code, you can ask it that the output not just be assembly code, but it also have a lot of information about the internal representation of the program at a fairly high level. That stuff goes through the assembler and the linker, and that internal representation is in the object code. When this goes into the LTO version of the compiler, then the compiler can look at all of your program, or at least all the pieces that you've given it, and make optimizations across them. So if you have a function over here that's calling foo, and foo is over here, you've got the definition of it, so you can just inline it. And there are a lot of other amazing things that can happen. It's really cool. And then the license, of course, is going to prevent you from writing some non-free software that goes in and operates its stuff at this level or this level. The other big new thing is plugins. And plugins in GCC are shared libraries. They have to be built using GCC internal header files, and there is no defined API, so those header files are constantly changing. So the expectation is that you'll build your plugin for a particular version of the compiler with access to its header files. And then when somebody invokes GCC, they say, I'm going to use this plugin, or I'm going to use these plugins. You can have more than one. When GCC starts up, it calls a portion of the plugin that has a common name across all of them and says, okay, what do you want me to do with you? And the plugin registers all the places in GCC where there are hooks that GCC can call back into the plugin. So the plugin has full access to all of the data structures in GCC. It can just look at them for things like enforcing a project's coding standards or for static analysis, or it can actually be a plugin for new optimization passes where it's actually going in and changing the code in GCC. I haven't heard anybody talking about plugins for the back end, but that's possible too. This is the first time it's gone out, and a lot of things are still up in the air, but so far, pretty much any time somebody working on a plugin has requested a new hook in the compiler, it's just been put in there. Okay, there's a lot more information at gcc.gnu.org and linked from there, lots of different places. Every year for the last 7 years, the GCC Summit has taken place, and there's a link from the webpage to the conference proceedings, which are all available online for lots of details about new stuff in GCC. Any questions? Okay, up here.
First of all, thanks for GCC. It's a foundation stone of this community, so it's a very important project. I work on a compiler for a very, very esoteric language, and we're currently using, it's open source, but we're using GCC as our back end, generating C code, which is really rather horrible. Does GCC have some place that would be nicer for us to hook into? Because the other alternative, of course, is LLVM, but as far as I'm concerned, that has some license issues. Mm-hmm. BSD being the license issue in particular.
Right. Well, the plugin support is meant to allow you to put in a different front end, I believe. So I'm not sure how that works if you just bypass the whole front end. I don't think that's somebody... Oh. I don't know if that's something that anybody has tried yet. I mean, plugins are really new, but you just jump into discussions on the GCC mailing lists and get advice about what would be the right way to do that. And most plugins are off in their own projects. There is information in the GCC website about those, so people can go and look at them. There are a couple of example plugins that are actually part of the GCC code itself, but generally those will be outside projects. Okay, other questions?
Just aimed, I see you, the manager of the test suite. How many test cases are you growing per new version? If the test suite had perfect coverage, you in theory wouldn't need to grow any more test cases unless you were perhaps targeting a particular optimization. So about how fast is the test suite growing?
Ooh, I don't have any statistics. When people add new functionality to GCC, like a new feature, they are required to add tests that test that new feature. When they fix bugs, they're required to add a test to make sure that that bug has gone away, you know, with a test case that used to work. When people add new optimizations, there's a convention for testing new optimizations by having certain strings that show up in the dump files for those optimizations, the debugging information, debugging dumps. And so there will be code in a test that should trigger a particular optimization, and then the test will look in the dump file and make sure that it's recorded there. I don't really have much to do with getting people to add tests. All of the maintainers, when they're approving patches, make sure that the new tests look adequate. I'm mostly working with the infrastructure of the test suite. But fortunately, everybody in the community takes the tests themselves very seriously. There are big parts of the compiler that are not necessarily tested, like the C standards performance. There are people who have access to other test suites that they run to make sure that the C compiler is conforming to the standard and the Fortran compiler and stuff. And we don't get data on test suite coverage. And that gets kind of strange, too, because GCC supports so many different languages and targets that there are big chunks of the compiler that are used or not used depending on what kind of architecture you're compiling for.
Okay, this will be the last question.
Not having to recompile to do useful debugging will be a huge win.
I can't hear you.
Not having to recompile to do useful debugging will be a huge win. So I'll have to get that person some flowers.
Okay, that's all the time we have for questions. The organizers of LCA 2010 would like to thank Janice for sharing her wisdom and time with us this morning, and would like to present this gift of Fiesco wines from one of the conference sponsors in appreciation. Can you all thank her, please?
Thank you.
Okay, next session in 15 minutes.